listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. In the who's who of radio, we're more of a what? Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning. So glad you could join us on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast, where we're broadcasting, believe it or not, live from Tacoma.
Together in the room.
Yeah, it's kind of weird not using our regular microphones.
Or soundboards.
Yeah, I've got this, what do you call it? Like this kind of, they call it an interview mic. Is what this is.
Oh, it looked like an iPod. Whatever.
Not that. I'm talking about the microphone, all right? It's not quite as high quality as our RE20s or 320s that we typically use. But, hey, it works, right? So the email, if you want to be a part of the show, is podcast@nativetalk.net. And you can always make comments through the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Now, winter is over, thank God.
Doesn't feel like it, but yay.
Sometimes. Well, look, out in Colorado where I live, it's just been snowing. Well, not as much as it was, but at least we're not in Moscow. Because Moscow, this last
December...
Way too
many cows in Moscow.
Well, this last December, Moscow got an entire 6 minutes of sun.
Oh, wow. In a whole month?
Yep. Average, the average for December is 18 hours. Now, this followed an atypically wet and chilly summer, so they didn't get much warmth in the summertime either. And so what do you do if you live in this situation?
You pull a Han Solo, cut open one of the cows that are everywhere out there, and just crawl inside.
Yeah. Well, there are too many cows, apparently. Well, what they did was they called the local mental health services and visited psychiatrist at a much higher than normal rate. Roman Vilfand, the head of Russia's weather service, says when they hear about these facts, many people say, wow, it's obvious why I was depressed. And, of course, with darkness comes extreme cold. Have you ever experienced the kind of cold that Russia is?
No, because I've never been to Russia, so I couldn't tell you one way or the other. But I've experienced very, very cold times. In fact, you were there at one of those times.
Yes.
We see, okay, what I didn't know is that a mountain, the shape of a mountain, air flows down it like a river would. Right? Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So in like a valley of a mountain, it's like a river of cold air pouring down at nighttime. We stupidly looked at this valley and we're like, oh, look at these trees and look how cool this area is. Let's camp down right here. And our thermometer went down to like negative 10 or negative 15.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, it wasn't helped by the fact that that turned out to be the coldest day of the entire year.
Yeah, yeah. So that, and our thermometer only went down as low as like a few degrees under zero, and it hit that line like at like 10 o'clock at night.
I have never seen – we had our dog with us, Josie.
Yeah, Josie was there.
And I've never seen a dog like start chewing – branches off of trees and building a nest.
We were putting our camp up, and she had never lived outside or anything, but yeah, she
knew
made her own little bed with branches.
I tried to tell her, Josie, you don't have to sleep outside, but she wasn't listening. Oh, and it was so cold in there because we were not prepared with like appropriate warm sleeping bags.
No, the whole mission was to test out snowshoes, and that's pretty much all we had the foresight to prepare for.
Yeah, so it was like freezing cold, and I realized that if I put my feet under the dog, it was much warmer. But I had to be very careful that Brandon here didn't see or realize that that was happening.
And she was being a little butt, too, because I kept trying to invite her to sleep in the sleeping bag with me, and she wouldn't have it. She kept going on top of Clifton's feet, apparently.
Yeah, I remember you threw something at me. You're like, why? How are you sleeping?
My toes were so cold, I thought they were going to fall off.
Yeah, and then you realized what I was doing. So in Russia, okay, it gets so goddamn cold that it feels like the cold literally reaches up and grabs you by your lower legs. Mm. And pretty soon it's hard to walk. So it becomes a necessity to wear long johns basically anytime you go outside.
Makes sense.
And I used to think that wearing a scarf was just a fashion accessory. It isn't. Because the wind will blow into the top of your shirt, and you need a scarf there. It's not a fashion accessory. It is a necessity.
But I could get like a baklava or whatever it's called, right? Balaklava?
Baklava, yeah.
Whatever, the one that's not the Russian dessert candy. The thing for your face. That's the one I like those.
Oh, yeah.
Terrorists love them too.
So in Yakutsk, which is generally considered to be the country's coldest area and is well known as the coldest area habited by people in the entire world.
And the reason for it is northern latitudes combined with continentality. It makes the temperature difference even greater than Antarctica. Like they go like through 170 degree temperature variance between the, like, it's like 70 degrees in the summer and like negative butt cold in the winter. Like, it's so bad there.
Well, their temperatures have been hovering over the winter, this last winter, at about minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, God.
To the point where they have, because they're so cold there, they have a novelty thermometer that you can, like, see in the town square. It got so cold, it broke the town's thermometer.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, let's talk about some of the Pacific Northwestern tribes. We're getting down to the end. I'm going to actually have to do some research after this. So, were you aware? I can't remember if it was you or if I was talking to Jason, that the Pacific Northwestern tribes were well known as very rich tribes.
They were
very wealthy out here.
I don't know if I remember that conversation.
I think I might have been talking to Jason.
Which is his son, for all those who don't have their Dakota rings on.
Right. Just go look at when I did podcast with him. So anyway, one of the things that made them so rich back in those days was not money, but it was food. If you were wealthy in food, you were wealthy because you could trade with it. You could get furs and the other things that you needed. And food in the Pacific Northwest was in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy to get. And so because they were so wealthy, unlike other tribes elsewhere in the country, the Pacific Northwestern coastal Indians never developed a democracy. They didn't have, like, voting and stuff like the way we do things now. I mean, we've got a tribal election coming up soon. So how did they rule? How do you know who's rich, who's not?
I mean, I don't know how it was actually done, but the way I figure it is if everyone has food to eat and a place to live, why do you need a ruler?
Because you always need leaders. And so they had different clans, okay? And everybody was grouped into specific clans. And the clan with the most wealth had the most power. Remember, that's not the same as money. Money is money, but wealth is defined as many different things. So you've got, you know, food, resources, family connections, and, of course, slave ownership. Because, yes, Pacific Northwestern tribes absolutely owned slaves.
Oh, wonderful.
So that took social climbing to a brand new level. So how do you gain respect?
Be a really good dancer.
No.
Oh, I love that you had to look at your notes for a second.
No,
like,
Is that right? No. I was looking for my soundboard so that I could buzz you.
Oh, okay.
But I don't have it with me because I
for reasons
here,
described earlier.
I came here mobile. No, what's the motto of our tribe?
We are like giving and welcoming people.
Giving, generous. So one of the ways you got respect was by giving things away. Because if you're rich, you can afford it. And so if somebody gave you one blanket, you gave them two or three blankets. So if you – and that's how you got respect. That's how you became famous, because you were just a giver. People would just come and say, here, sir, would you like a blanket? And you say, son of a gun, I got to give him three blankets now. So and it just was a way to show that you were rich, okay? Another way that they would show their richness was through giving the best potlatch. Because
is that like a key for your door? No?
No. Latch? I need my buzzer.
Oh, dang.
No, it is not. If you want to show how wealthy you are, you would give the best potlatch. And this is basically a giant party. Think canoe journey.
Okay.
Okay. Everybody comes. You feed everyone. You have a big party. They're expensive. And clans would spend absolute fortunes on a single potlatch. Even wealth they didn't have. So they didn't have money, and they're doing it anyway.
They're going into debt. It's the America's debt problems. This is the beginning.
Yeah. I'm sure this sounds nothing like you've ever heard. They wanted to appear like they were wealthy, even if they weren't.
Keeping up with the Joneses.
So the need to show how wealthy you were, no matter how untrue, nearly destroyed certain clans. Because they would spend everything.
Well, especially if your ranking was determined by your social status through giving, then the only way to climb the ranks is to give all, basically.
So what saved them, believe it or not, at the time, was the white men and the fur trade. Because the fur trade was first introduced by the settlers who came out west. Furs were really easy for the early native people to get. They were wonderful hunters. But before that, what else were they good for? Use them for clothes, and that's about it.
Well, the furs, yeah. You would use them for shelter and warmth, basically.
But when something is incredibly abundant, what's it worth?
Only what people who can't get it can place on it, right? Cause
exactly.
I don't know if anyone else experiences this, but whenever I have a lot of something, I don't really care about it.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm like, I may really, really want, like, I don't know, a cordial cherry. But if you give me a box of 50 cordial cherries, I'm not going to care very much about them until I'm at my last one. When it's like my last one or two cordial cherries, then it's like, oh, these are the most important pieces of chocolate confection in the universe. But when I have 50 of the same thing, I don't care at all.
Dude, do you remember when we were growing up, I loved popsicles.
I know where this is going.
Okay, and
damn it, when
we were really young, our mother would buy these popsicles. We could only have a certain number per kid.
And these are these twin pops.
Like, yeah, where twin pops. It's like, cheap.
It's like Kool-Aid frozen, but with two popsicle sticks stuck in there.
Yeah, everybody knows these.
Yeah, these the cheapest ones that you could find in the 90s. That's so, what we're talking
so
about.
So because they were scarce, because our parents wouldn't buy them that often, I really liked them and I really wanted them. So when I got my first job, I went to the store and I would buy them. The thing is, I didn't really like the blue flavor, the banana flavor, or cherry. I liked root beer flavor. And that was the only flavor I liked. So I would buy, like, bags and bags. And I had a one of those old Army ammo boxes that I had installed a lock on.
Yeah. You put a little eye on there so that you could put a padlock on it.
Yeah. And so I locked up all the root beers, and because I had so many of them, but they were locked up, it created this artificial abundance of other popsicle flavors and a scarcity of the root beer flavors. Now, all I wanted was that flavor, and I didn't want other people to eat them. But I noticed all of a sudden when they couldn't have them, everybody was like, give me a root beer flavor. Give me a root beer flavor. I'm like, well, maybe you go clean my room. And they did it.
It got worse. It got worse. So Clifton recognized that, why am I wasting my money on buying this? Because it was like $2.50 for a bag of popsicles, and you got like 12 root beers out of them or something like that.
Yeah.
And so Clifton decided that he's going to start charging my friends and other neighborhood kids like 25 or 50 cents a popsicle, And so you would sell off the garbage ones. No, I think he had a tiered system. So, like, root beers were more expensive. So if you wanted a root beer pop, you had to fork over the dough. So he was able to have this sustainable source of root beer popsicles because he was selling them individually.
My favorite part of this whole story is after I left and Kayla was talking about how much she loved them and wanted them. And then when she was able to go buy them, she said, you know, they're really not that good.
I don't even like these.
They were so much better when I wasn't allowed to have them.
Why did I work so hard for this?
So that's the way the fur trade was for Pacific Northwestern Indian. You just go out there and you get furs anytime you want. So they weren't very valuable. But when the white men came and all of a sudden they're like, oh, my God, I'll pay you this much for the furs. They're like, for these furs?
Wow, really? You're going to give me all of that? And didn't they have, like, copper pots and stuff that the natives weren't using up in that point?
Yeah, exactly. And so they were buying all that kind of stuff.
They're like, look at this magic. You just want these crappy furs for it? Here you go.
So all of a sudden, fur wealth from the trade is pouring into the Pacific Northwest. The white traders had steel tools, which are harder than anything they were using at the time. So with the coming of the fur trade and steel tools, many of the native people were suddenly able to gain the wealth that they needed to climb the social ladder of their own culture. So it sustained them going forward. So they were really happy about that. And I mentioned slaves. We're basically finishing up the section on the lesson from here.
Oh, you're just gonna run through all the material?
I'm just gonna run through all of it.
On to the next.
So how do you get a slave?
With a net and a fast horse.
Okay. I think you're talking about Planet of the Apes.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So back in the, you know, the East, where the white men were, you could just go down to the local auction and buy yourself a slave.
Jesus. But that makes me sick. Sorry. Just the flippant way in which you said that made me realize just how common practice it was. It just made me feel ill.
It was, well, obviously, with today's perspective. But the natives would actually enslave each other, you know, folks from other tribes. And so they would get them through war, buying them, and debt. So if you owed someone money, you could actually pay them by becoming their slave until the debt was paid.
Well, that doesn't sound like slavery. That sounds like indentured servitude.
Yeah, exactly. And did you remember in college when I was doing a speech class and I wanted to kind of rile people up and I advocated like a return to slavery?
Oh, Jesus. No, I don't remember. I remember the pie in the face. I don't remember this.
Yeah, I advocated return to slavery. And this was basically...
Christ, are you serious?
Dude, I started with the homeless statistics, talking about which, seriously, homeless people are a huge problem in this country. And for natives, along with, you know, a lot of other folks. But, you know, natives are homeless at a higher rate than any other race. But
now, hold on. I'm sorry, just to rephrase what you said. You said the homeless are a big problem. What you meant was homelessness is a problem, right? Like, you don't want to go eradicate homeless people.
No.
Okay.
No.
So homelessness is a problem in America. The homeless, not so much of a problem, right? You don't have a problem with the people that are homeless.
Correct.
All right, am I correct? I feel like you're lying for the radio.
No, it does not make me happy when homeless people are homeless, okay? I would like everyone to have a job and a home. It's a good thing, all right? And so basically what I advocated was when I established the fact that homelessness was a problem, I said, hey, some people don't want to be homeless, but they don't see a way out of it. There's no way for them to go get a job. They don't have an address. It's, you know, just imagine your average homeless person who's been homeless for a length of time walking into your place of business and applying for a job. They're probably not going to get it.
Well, the other thing that I may not be a very popular opinion is I've been in places like depression and I've been in really dark places in my life and alcoholism, for example. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, how do you climb out of it? How do you turn your life around? I recognize that there's better things out there, It's really hard. Like, it's really hard to be a functioning member of society, especially if your day is lived doing whatever you want, however you want it. Like, it's a challenge to find the motivation to want to turn your life around because you feel more comfortable in the doldrum in which you sit, you know? Like, so it's even more than just being dirty and people not wanting to accept you. Somebody who wants to turn their life around may give up and go back to being homeless just because they like it better.
Yeah. And so my basic argument was the major problem with slavery throughout history has been the fact that it's been forced. When you force somebody into slavery.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem with slavery. Forget the whipping and the forced labor. No, the problem is that is that it's against your will. I'm fine with hitting you with a strap of leather as long as you want it.
I'm talking about my argument and my speech, okay? Remember, my entire point...
bless America.
Remember, my entire point was to rile people up.
It's working.
That was the point behind it, all right? And... And so I argued that
I can only imagine being a professor in this class and hearing this student.
Oh, the horrifying. Okay, I had two looks. Either people were laughing hysterically or they looked horrified, which was my goal. All right. I wanted to divide the class between people who saw it for the joke that it was and the people who thought I was serious and were shocked and terrified.
I'm walking the fence right now, right between those two things.
So I said, what if slavery was voluntary and it had regulations, they had certain rights and stuff like that, and you could sign yourself over just like this. You owe somebody money, or let's say you want a house, you want food, you want job training and stuff like that.
Well,
and
wait, didn't you just describe the U.S. military?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But what if it was extended to average people and private citizens with, like, companies could say, hey, I've got a farm, I've got a cattle ranch, I've got, you know, an oil field. And you get people who say, hey, I want a way out of this, and you can take them on. And as long as there's regulations and rules governing it, you can't whip people. They're not your property.
Well, then it's not real slavery. I mean, if you're going to do it, you either go big or go home, all right?
Yeah.
We're breaking toes if you run, all right? We're going to separate your wife and kids from you. We're doing the whole nine.
Yeah, you can't do that. It did accomplish the goal, however. So in the Pacific Northwest, the tribes who obtained the slaves, no matter how they got them, the slaves didn't exactly have an easy life. I know that's shocking. Slaves were not allowed to marry. If they were already married, their marriage was annulled. Slaves had no rights. They were property. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that goes right down the problem road. Here's my favorite part. A slave could actually be sacrificed at a potlatch.
Oh, my.
This was done to prove that the clan was so wealthy that they could just kill a slave or destroy a canoe or even burn a house without missing it. The look on your face.
I'm horrified. Because, I mean, okay, to me, that's like Elon Musk shooting his car into space, you know? Like, this could be used for so many good things.
Yeah, well, you know, when you give people slaves, they don't always use them the way they should. But debts had to be paid. Sometimes it was just smarter to lose respect so you could come back and restore your dignity another day.
Good Lord.
But some people just chose to go the slavery route. I'm thinking that's probably not the best way to go.
Not the way I would choose, if given the choice.
Yeah. All right. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with more stimulating Native Talk Radio right here at nativetalk.net.
Always remember, animals are your friends, but they still won't pick you up at the airport.
The nativetalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon.
Skip it back and do it
now,
over.
Now grab your nets and...
Always remember, animals are your friends, but they still won't pick you up at the airport.
The nativetalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced. Whoa,
wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or...
Why is my son having trouble in school?
Finding lowest airfare to Istanbul.
No, I'm tired of fighting with my son over his homework.
Home, walk, restaurant, need a review?
No, he's smart, but his mind wanders.
Seven wonders of the world.
Why don't you understand me?
I do. I was trying to show how Connor feels every day. Redirecting to understood.org.
Join parents and experts at understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues to help your child thrive.
Brought to you by understood.org and the Ad Council.
This is NativeTalk.net radio podcast. When severe weather threatens...
After a roller coaster winter, we're looking ahead to what spring has in store.
A global superstorm developing off towards the Atlantic Ocean.
Run like hell and be sure to take us with you. And grab your nets so we can go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Message line, if you want to call in and drop us a line, 970-278-5791. And, of course, you can visit us at NativeTalk.net to download and listen to any of our past shows. So, how, Brandon, do you feel about marijuana?
Oh, I feel great.
Do you?
Often.
And how do you feel about legalization of it?
Oh, I believe that the negatives of legalization of it, they say that crime rate goes up a little bit and things like that happen. I haven't seen enough of the statistics to show me that it's you know, enough of an increase to be that concerned about. And the monetary benefits of it for governments, you know, local governments is huge.
So you think that that's the reason why people get into the weed business is just for the money?
Well, the people selling it, yeah. The people smoking it will have anything from medical reasons to pain relief reasons to... 'cause, like, for example, the CBDs in marijuana can stop children from having seizures. Okay. Incredible, right? You can extract it so the children can take little pills and they don't seize up anymore and they can, like, you know, lead a normal life and they don't get high, right? There's no psychedelic effect of it. So there's lots of different reasons why somebody may choose to partake in it, but the people selling it, I think it's for... money reasons. Why do we sell anything?
Money reasons.
Well, yeah. I mean, why would someone open a quick quack car wash? They're trying to make some money.
Well, like most folks, the Lipe Nation of Santa Ysabel got into the weed business for the money. Now, this is a 700-member tribe about 45 minutes east of San Diego. And guess what? They tried the way a lot of tribes have done it. They opened a casino. Didn't go that well.
Oh, no.
You're about 45 minutes east of San Diego. You know, it's kind of farther out there. And they are now $50 million in debt from that failed casino project. But in December 14, the...
In December 2014?
December of 2014, the Obama Department Justice Department issued what was known as the Wilkinson memo. Giving Native American tribes the same leeway that had been given to states like Colorado and Washington State. Basically, the federal government told the tribes that, hey, if you keep marijuana regulated, keep it out of the hands of children, keep it out of the hands of criminals, you know, so they can – you don't want to have somebody walking in and say, yeah, I'd like 40 kilos of your best weed. And they go, sure, no problem, you know, because they're probably going to – take it somewhere else and sell it.
Probably not, because that would be a really stupid business venture to go to a, because the street price is pretty on par with what the weed distributors are selling it at.
Not if you buy it in bulk.
It's pretty on par, is what I'm saying. That'd be a really, really dumb person to go buy a product for a little bit more expensive and try to sell it for a little cheaper
if you're buying it retail. But if you had the ability to be a supplier and nobody's looking over your shoulder, meaning you do whatever you want to do, why wouldn't you give them a wholesale price while they go and do the dirty work elsewhere? You're going to improve your bottom line there because you get all the money up front. They go sell it in piecemeal in other states. Or perhaps Mexico, if you've got better stuff. Anyway, the point is, keep it out of the hands of criminals.
I guess what I'm saying is that's pennies, and criminals probably aren't going to be risking federal prosecution off of pennies. You know, that's a really dumb business. It seems like an unsuccessful way to make money.
I think it's okay for them to have the rule not to sell to criminals.
All right.
For purposes of distribution.
All right, but I'm just saying, if there's some felon out there who's committed a crime, I'm fine with him smoking a little weed.
And all of a sudden, impoverished tribes all over the country had skunky smelling dollar signs in their eyes. Pot entrepreneurs realized that because tribes generally don't need to pay income taxes, you know, on tribally produced businesses anyway, partnering with tribal governments might allow them to get out of paying the whopping federal tax bill necessary for anyone selling a Schedule I drug. So this particular tribe, Santa Ysabel, was approached by 300 marijuana businesses. And they said, hey, we'll grow it. We'll run the store for you. We'll take care of everything, give you a cut of the profits. You don't have to do anything. Just let us run it on your land.
Yikes. Okay.
Good deal?
Well, I wouldn't take it.
Why not?
Because I don't believe in... Okay, if I have a business opportunity and someone tells me all you have to do is sit back and do nothing, I don't feel good. I have this instinctual feeling of, no, I want to go out there and do my own work. To make my own money. I don't like someone making my money for me and they just say sit back and do nothing. If I ever get to that point, it's because I want my business venture to be so successful from my work that I can then sit back and let someone else take over. But that's only once I've earned that position. I don't feel right starting out that way.
Well, they chose 7 different companies to set up the various aspects of it, cultivation, manufacturing, testing lab, and investors began predicting that Indian weed was going to be an even bigger business than tribal gaming.
Yeah, I believe that.
I wish I had my buzzer because 3 years later, the future of tribal cannabis doesn't look too good.
Oh.
Obviously. You know, we had an election in 2016, but I've forgotten who won that.
I don't think you did. I think you know very well who won that.
Yeah, it was President Trump.
I don't think anyone can forget that.
And I'm sure this will shock you.
We're all still living with PTSD.
The new Department of Justice memo has been rescinded, or that old Obama memo has been rescinded by Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General,
sure.
And the cops have shut down several prominent reservation-based weed businesses.
Boo!
Including a planned marijuana resort in South Dakota.
Which sounds amazing. I want a marijuana resort.
Well, not anymore. They shut it down. Now, in California is the largest market with the most lucrative opportunities in the world, and things are looking worse than ever out there. Now that the state of California has legalized adult-use weed and is licensing pot businesses basically right and left, this seems like a good deal for the tribes, right?
Depending on how they classify tribal land with it.
Yeah, they're throwing up a lot of roadblocks specifically for tribes. So if you want to open a pot business, it's easy unless you're a Native American tribe.
So the exact opposite of what it was in 2014, basically.
Yes.
Lovely.
And it's not the federal government doing it. It's the state of California.
Probably because they want to withhold new business ventures. Because as I understand it, the state government is not able to own any buildings until, I can't remember if it's 1 or 2 years afterward. It was written into the law that the people that are starting out the business ventures mm-hmm. can only be private business ventures for now, and then they're going to open it up to the states in a few years. Basically, they want to make mom and pop shops be established before government can show up and drive prices way down.
Well, under the current regulations, governing bodies of cities and counties get to decide who receives local marijuana business permits. So you can't just go to the state. You have to have your city and county decide who gets them and who doesn't get them, okay? But tribes are not being given the same authority because they are a basically a sovereign government, right?
Right.
And so if you give, you know, hey, Sacramento County or whatever, you get to decide who gets businesses and who doesn't. Tribes, you do not get the same rights. Instead, tribal cannabis businesses can only acquire licenses that allow them to work with state legal operators if the tribe agrees to cede all licensing power to the state. Basically, oh yeah, we'll let you enter the cannabis business, but you have to, you can't set your own rules. In other words, you can't be sovereign.
So they want natives to adhere to whatever rules are set in place and apply any changes that are set in the future that apply to all weed businesses in the state.
Yeah, the state gets ultimate licensing power.
And they want basically tribes to be on the same level as everybody else.
How do you think tribal leaders respond to that?
Y'all took our land, so do this or leave, you know?
Yet another example of the government asking tribes to give up some of their hard-won sovereignty. Basically, the state of California is locking tribes out of the market, and it's not fair, says Utaguatu Paiute chairwoman Tina Braithwaite, whose tribe began growing marijuana in the past few years on their land close to the California border with Nevada. She says, "We were here first. These are our nations. They stuck us out in these remote areas, said, hey, make it work, survive. And then when we try, they try to put us down."
Right, and the one thing that made me feel ultimately super, super disgusted was they took tribes that had a way of life with their surroundings and then relocated them to completely different surroundings that had no resources and said, good luck.
Yep.
Blank off.
Now, what they're trying to do to do their successful weed business where they get to license and run it themselves, those bills have passed in pot legal states like Nevada, Oregon, Washington, allowing at least 10 tribes, ours included, to negotiate deals with state governments, you know, government-to-government deals, and open up marijuana businesses.
Good.
Okay, so a reservation just off the Las Vegas Strip, the New Woo Cannabis Marketplace, claims to be the largest marijuana store on the planet.
So wow.
So if you're ever down in the Las Vegas area, there you go. But in California, those close to the situation say that their efforts are being held up by a combination of influential pot businesses wanting to corner the market and good old-fashioned racism.
All right. That's not alive and well in California.
No.
I'm sorry, in America is what I meant to say, in the U.S.
In some corners of the cannabis community, the theme that folks are hearing in the California Growers Association says, hey, there's less competition if they can't get licenses.
Exactly right.
Keep them out.
And especially since natives can often get away from taxation and such like that, they can lower the price of their goods and undercut the state stores, right?
Yeah. Well, guess what? When you have a sovereign land, which is what it should be, you're able to set your own rules.
Right.
At least that's the way it
should be.
Should be.
In my opinion.
It's not, of course. I'm sure nobody's shocked by that revelation, right?
I'm clutching my pearls in disbelief.
So, obviously, there's a huge learning curve in educating the membership about the health benefits, the medical application of cannabis, but now they're shipping hundreds of pounds of product to about 50 different dispensaries throughout California, okay? This is one of the California tribes. They're basically breaking the law, saying, what are you going to do?
Well, it's what all the states have been doing thus far, so shoot.
Exactly.
Lead by example.
They say, we've done everything right. We're in total compliance. And the longer we're blocked from entering the legal cannabis market, the more handicapped we'll be when eligibility finally occurs. Right now, it's not a level playing field. So what they're doing is the dispensaries that are not quite legal, but they're not quite illegal, that's who they're sending to.
Yeah.
So hopefully California gets that worked out.
They should. I mean, it's in my opinion, it's only fair.
It really is. So anyway, thank you, as always, for listening. That'll do it for us today, but we'll be back here next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. We hope you'll share the show with your friends and send them to our website. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Have a great day. See you guys next week.
Thanks, all.